Live from the Aviva Trattoria Studio, it's the Grace Curley Show.
We got to bring in a new voice, a young voice, a rising voice, Grace Curley.
You can read Grace's work in the Boston Herald and the Spectator.
Especially Grace, stand up.
Here's the millennial with the mic, Grace Curley.
Hello, everyone, and welcome back to the Grace Curley Show. I hope your week is off to a fabulous start, and we thank you for joining us today. We have so much news to get to. Over the weekend, Donald Trump met with Ron DeSantis in Miami, and now there's speculation that perhaps there could be a ticket there. We're going to talk about that. We're going to talk about the 12th Amendment, whether or not that's going to apply, whether or not this is even a possibility. We will get into all of it. We also have Jim Biden, Joe's brother. I want to call him the Fredo of the Biden family, but they're all Fredo. You know, there's no Michael in the Biden bunch. It's just all a bunch of guys pretending to be smart, going, I can do it. I can do it. Just, you know, have faith in me, Mike. I'm not dumb like they say I am. That's every single Biden. I would actually say you could throw Valerie in there, too. She is also Fredo. It's amazing. 844-500-4242. She's Freda. And the latest scoop, as far as Jim is concerned, is he's getting his brother into trouble yet again. Bombshell story out of Politico that shows former discotheque, what do we call him? A discotheque entrepreneur? Discotheque businessman?
I think I like entrepreneur.
Yeah. He seems like he's always up to something. He's always...
Well, Hunter was a railroad expert, I believe. So
he's
he could
a
be
discotheque expert.
Discotheque expert.
Discotexpert.
Yeah, Discotexpert.
Maybe that's his thing. You know what is a word that always comes up when you're talking about Jim Biden? Ventures. And you know what I'm starting to realize? If you see the word ventures...
He's a venture communist.
If you see it too much, Jared, put your antennas up. Like, you might be about to get scammed. If someone keeps throwing out the word ventures to you, I got a lot of ventures going. You know, I'm working on a lot of things. Have your antennas up. You know, your ears should perk up at that point and go, why? What are you trying to sell me? It could be a discotheque. It could be a hospital chain somewhere in the United States. But Jim Biden is involved with the Qatari government, Qatari officials, in trying to pull one over on them. And again, using the Biden family name.
This is pure Biden.
Which means a whole lot of nothing to most of us. But using that name to try to enrich himself and enrich the Biden family. But I actually wanted to start off today with an update on the anti-Israel riots, protests, disasters that are going on all across the country at college campuses. And now all these students, or a lot of these students at least, are asking for amnesty. Like they want to make a stink. They want to bring on the Hamas flags and chant free Palestine from the river to the sea. Palestine will be free. Burn Tel Aviv to the ground. All of these very nuanced things. And at the same time, though, they don't want to be arrested. Like, they want amnesty from being arrested, which I talk about a great deal. You can do whatever you want. Destroy the campus and sit on the sprinklers with buckets and get amnesty for it. Sounds pretty nice. And so I wanted to give you guys some updates. And we'll start with Columbia, because that is really where so much of this has started. They were kind of the first to set off this trend of people just going crazy. So Columbia president Manu Shafiq admits talks with anti-Israel protesters have broken down. What struck me about this is that the brilliant minds at Columbia, whether it be the student body or some of the professors, we know a lot of the faculty, Jared, agree with the students. That's part of the problem here. They're all kind of the same mindset. It's this petri dish of progressive radicalism. It's not students versus teachers at this point. Some of the teachers just have to separate themselves, at least optically, to pretend that they're trying to get this under control. But their ideology lines up across the board. And so part of what cracks me up about this is that these are the same people. They want to tell Bibi Netanyahu, they want to tell these Israeli military officials how they should be negotiating with the Hamas terrorists who came in and slaughtered their people. And yet, they can't negotiate a situation between the school administration and the students. Like, we're supposed to take their word for it. They're going to end this war in the Middle East with their activism, with their protests, but they can't even come to an agreement amongst themselves. But we're supposed to be listening to them and like jotting this down. Tell me what you think and I'll tell Bibi. Okay, give me more advice. When you're done sitting on the sprinkler, give me a 5-point plan and I'll bring it to Bibi. And I'm sure he'll take all of you seriously. Like, he must be looking, and that's part of this too, is now we're getting closer to these graduation ceremonies, which if you've ever gone to, if you're a part of any of these fancy institutions, higher education, higher learning, you know that the graduation ceremonies are very important. They spend, I think Emma was telling me at Harvard, it's like 6 figures they spend to get the lawns prepped. You know, they rent these gorgeous tents. There's all sorts of booze involved. Everybody's there to celebrate. And by the way, it's very fun. As someone who's partaken in a college graduation and kind of the days leading up to it, it's a very fun, jovial time. But this is all at risk now, thanks to these freedom fighters that are on the front lawns and just disrupting everything. And so I think the schools are starting to get panicky because the parents are supposed to come in at this point, the big donors, they're supposed to be wowed by the campus and by the graduates and by the pomp and circumstance. And instead, what they're going to be greeted with is like potentially having red paint thrown at them. You know, they're going to be greeted by these tantrum throwing monsters. And so I think the schools are starting to, they're hedging their bets. They're like, okay, do we send in police? Do we squash this? Is that only going to rile these students up more? Do we come to some sort of deal? And then I keep reading how the Biden administration, as always, is really encouraging / pressuring Bibi Netanyahu to come to a pretend ceasefire, because you can't come to a ceasefire in good faith with Hamas terrorists who say they want October 7th to happen 10,000 times, like over and over and over again. So we can say the word ceasefire, but it's meaningless. It doesn't actually mean there was a ceasefire on October 6th. It doesn't actually mean anything. And so I think that what the Biden administration should do is just level with Bibi Netanyahu and cross their fingers and hope that he takes pity on them and kind of say to him, listen, Bibi, if you don't agree to a pretend ceasefire with these terrorists who want to eradicate you and all of Israel, then you should know that you are going to ruin graduation season at several of our fanciest universities in America. The tents have already been rented. The grass has already been prepped. The sprinkler systems have already been paid for. And you are risking, by trying to protect and defend Israel, by trying to protect people who have gone through the worst slaughter since the Holocaust, you should know that you are putting our graduation ceremonies and the pomp and circumstance at Yale and Princeton and Columbia and NYU and Harvard, you're putting that all at risk. And if you can live with yourself, if you can continue on and being determined to eliminate Hamas, knowing that, well, then that's on you. That's on your conscience. It's not on us anymore. So this is what the Columbia University, they put out a statement. The president, who I don't think she's going to be president for much longer, she warned that the Ivy League school was now looking at other options to end this crisis as soon as possible. The university's goal for the talks was a collaborative resolution. Don't you love to collaborate? With the protesters that would result in the orderly removal of the encampment from the lawn. The students also were asked to commit going forward to following the university's rules, including those on the time, place, and manner for demonstrations and events. I think we've received the message that these protesters are not interested in following university rules.
Have they tried to cease protest?
That's what I'm saying. That's what I'm just, you know, this madness must end. It says we are consulting. You got to consult, Jared. This is why we got to get into the consulting business, because I'm sure Columbia is paying big bucks to some consulting firm. We are consulting with a broader group in our community to explore alternative internal options to end this crisis as soon as possible. The president said, adding that the administration wished protesters had reached a different outcome. You know who they should be consulting with? The Harvard sprinkler system. That's who they need to consult with. It's like, how do we get these sprinklers up and operating? Operation Soak'em must go on. She said, regretfully, we were not able to come to an agreement. You know how sometimes when there's any sort of negotiation going on, you can really quickly tell who's got more of the power, like what the power dynamic is. I don't think there's any question that these protesters are calling the shots. I don't know if it was like the yarn spinning dances, the Manson-esque cult dances outside, or the signs, or just the fact that they're saying, like, no, not only are we not going to put up with this, we need a guarantee that you're not going to call in the National Guard or the NYPD. We need it in writing. They're calling the shots. They are running the asylum at this point. And anything that these presidents or these boards or these administrators are trying to say is just bogus. And I have something else on that front, because there was another story out of the Crimson that these protesters hoisted the Palestinian flag over the John Harvard statue in the yard. And that's a place where they sometimes fly the American flag. And it was talking in this story in the Crimson, it talked about how following this vigil that the students held, a group of seven administrators entered the encampment zone to check IDs. So they're going around, like, you know, when you're skiing and somebody has to scan your lift ticket and make sure that you're not scamming the system. Well, these administrators are now going into the encampment and just trying to make sure that the people there are actually students. And I read that and I thought, you'd have to pay. I'd be interested in some sort of raise as an administrator if they say, okay, Professor Curley, we have you in for the 9 o'clock slot to go check IDs in the encampment. I'd be like, hell no, you don't. I'm not going in there with a 10-foot pole. Try somebody else. You should. I hope the administrators they're sending in are the people who have sympathy for the cause of these protesters. Because if I was pro-Israel and I was a professor there, not that there's probably a lot of those, but I would say, absolutely not. I will not be going in there. Thank you very much. 844-500-4242. We'll take your calls on all of this. Like I said, there is so much to get to today, and I cannot wait to talk to all of you. We'll be right back. Don't go anywhere.
Hi, it's Toby from Cape Gunworks. I'm taking all your firearm and self-defense questions every Tuesday. Join Grace and me for 2A Tuesday, Tuesdays at 2 p.m.
This is The Grace Curley Show.
Welcome back, everyone, to The Grace Curley Show. The Karen Reed trial, this saga that has gripped New England, really starts up today. The juror selection took, I think, a little bit longer than they expected. A lot of people in this area, obviously the story's out of Canton, but a lot of people in Massachusetts in general have been following the story and have made their own, they've had their opinions on what's going on. And I think if you know anything about it, it's hard not to. It's hard not to listen to, I don't even want to say conspiracy theories, because that's not what it is. It's hard not to listen to the people defending Karen Reed and not start to say, well, you're right. A lot of these things don't add up. Whether it's the snow plow and the time the plow came, whether it's the taillight, whether it's the text messages, the Google searches, there's just so much. And Turtle Boy, who we've had on the show a lot, if you want to get a more comprehensive idea of this case, you should go back to our old podcast, especially from a few months ago when we first started having Turtle Boy on. Every time he was on the show, he would break it down basically from the beginning for people. And they did decide 2 days ago that they would allow Aidan Kearney, Turtle Boy, to be in court to see this trial. And he's tweeting about it right now, Jared. And you just read me some explosive tweets.
Yeah. So these tweets started about an hour ago. Apparently, David Yannetti, the defense, the opening statement was Karen Reed was framed. So, I mean, right out of the gate, they're just not holding back. But the crazy stuff that Dr. Turtleboy, at Dr. Turtleboy on Twitter, the crazy stuff, Michael Proctor texted a friend, and he said that he hoped Karen Reed killed herself before going through her phone without permission from a judge. And apparently Michael Proctor also texted friends and said he went through Karen's phone looking for nudes. That's according
to Turtleboy.
That is insane.
That is insane. Double check, though, because there's John Proctor and there's Michael Proctor. I get them confused. 844-500-4242. This is all just breaking now, so forgive us if we're getting the details a little murky. We will print it out. I'm always going to try to get Turtleboy on the show, but he's in court. You know, he's actually watching these things. And I think how this is going to end up playing out over the next couple weeks is he's probably going to be able to go on Howie's show later in the night and kind of break down what he heard in court, which is a bummer for us from 12 to 3, but we might have to pull some sound from that. 844-500-4242. Okay, so today's poll question is brought to you by J.J. Manning Auctioneers. Whether residential, commercial, or land, J.J. Manning can get your property sold now. To learn more, contact Charlie Gill at 800-521-0111 or go to jjmanning.com. With over 16,000 sales and satisfied clients, you can be the next one. Jared, this poll question is a story all on its own that we have to talk about, but what is the poll question and what are the results thus far?
Today's poll question, which you can vote in at gracecurlyshow.com, is did Kristi Noem eliminate herself from VP contention with her dog story?
Yes, and so I tweeted this out, and there's kind of two arguments happening in the responses. A lot of people are arguing whether or not she did anything wrong legally or morally and having that argument. That's not really what the poll question is about. The poll question is, does this make her a non-starter for VP? And I think the answer to that is yes. I think she's, I don't know if she thought by putting out this story about her shooting her 14-month-old dog, which I do believe that that's more of a puppy than a dog, right? I think you're a puppy until you're like 18 months. I think that by putting this story in her upcoming book, I can't figure out if she thought she was going to get ahead of it or she thought this was going to be a good story. That one to me is very hard to understand. But maybe she thought it was going to come out eventually, similar to Mitt Romney with Seamus on top of the car. So she figured I'll get ahead of it. But I don't know what she was trying to do, but I can tell you that whatever she was trying to do didn't work. And I would say she is no longer in the running for VP.
72% of the audience agrees, yes, this story takes her out of VP contention.
All right, now we do have a statement from Kristi Noem that we will talk about at some point today. She put out a long explanation as to why she included this in her book. I saw some explanation where she said, you know, a better politician wouldn't have included this. And I was thinking, you're damn right about that, Kristi. Governor of South Dakota might not be in the running for VP anymore. When we come back, we'll talk about that and more Palestinian flags over Harvard Yard. Don't go anywhere.
Live from the Aviva Trattoria Studio.
By the way, I did have a few sources, some anonymous sources, who were around the courthouse today in Dedham, and they told me it was pretty wild. A lot of people there, a lot of reporters, some choppers up above. We'll keep you posted on this. It's obviously a little bit tricky since they're currently in court and, you know, hearing this case. But as we get the updates from Twitter, we will let you know what's going on. So far, though, it seems like first day right out the gates. This is a lot of bombshells being dropped. 844-500-4242. 802 has a great point. Good afternoon, Grace. They should turn off outdoor Wi-Fi at the schools with demonstrations and watch them protest internet services being cut instead. If they shut off the Wi-Fi, that would be a great poll question. What would be a more effective deterrent to squash these protests? Sprinklers or cutting the Wi-Fi? Because I have a feeling that these hero activists are probably very, very distressed when they're not getting a good signal.
You can't put a bucket over no Wi-Fi.
You can't. You absolutely can't. Mike, you're up next on the Grace Curley Show. What's going on, Mike?
Hey, Grace, thanks for taking my call. I just wanted to make a couple of points about the Israel war. Now, first of all, I think people should remember that Israel was the only country that agreed to coexist, or I should say attempted to coexist with the Palestinian people after all the other Arab countries said, no, we don't want you here. So I think that's kind of important. And not only that, I forgot my second point. Hang on a second. Let's see. Oh, yeah. Not just the coexistence, but the Palestinian people elected Hamas as their government. They voted. They wanted those radical Islamic, whatever you want to call them, they wanted those folks to leave them. So,
terrorists. You know, they wanted like, the terror. Yeah, yeah, Mike, I want to cut in here because you just hit on a point that I think there's been this attempt to sugarcoat the fact that a lot of people in Gaza, a lot of Palestinians, do support Hamas. They voted for Hamas. They support what happened on October 7th. It's not everybody. There's definitely innocent Palestinians. And, you know, my heart breaks for any innocent person who is being subject to war. But this idea that there isn't support amongst a great number of Palestinians for October 7th and for Hamas is just farcical. It's just not true. And the polls actually highlight that. Now, of course, you've got to take those polls with a grain of salt, but it would suggest that there's a lot more support than the media would lead you to believe or any of these protesters would lead you to believe. Thank you, Mike, for calling in. And I want to go to another story. I just mentioned this from I mentioned the story from The Crimson, which was about the Palestinian flags, which didn't surprise me. And now they're sending administrators into this encampment to check IDs, to essentially be bouncers and make sure everyone there is only want the Jew-hating students to be in the encampment. We don't want outside Jew haters to come in and water down the potency of this current anti-Semitism that is just brewing on all of these campuses. Now, the warning of disciplinary action, the don't of these college administrators, it's not working. Do you notice that's a theme here? The deterrence, the threats, the warnings that these pro-Hamas radical professors and administrators give to the students, it's not having any effect. It reminds me of Joe Biden when he talks to Iran, when he talks to Hamas, and he said, or when he talks to Putin, don't. Still do anyway. So now this disciplinary action is not, this threat of disciplinary action is not working. And keep in mind, Jared, some of the disciplinary threats are, if you guys don't cut it out, 3, 2, 1, you might not get your degree. You might not get, but I was thinking about this. What is worth more to someone graduating from Harvard? And Aaron Shadbourne's listening. He's filling in for Howie today. Aaron, you can call in if you want. Go ahead, call in. We can have a back and forth. I know he gets a little defensive about his alma mater. What is more valuable to a current graduating student from Harvard? Having a degree, getting your diploma, versus being able to say, I went to Harvard for 4 years and I didn't get my diploma because I was part of the anti-Semitic encampment on the front lawn of Harvard. Like, which one for the people hiring these students is going to pack more of a punch? Now, I would say that it kind of depends on what the next 4 years is going to look like. I think if Donald Trump gets into the White House and a lot of the DEI industry starts falling apart, which we've already seen the wheels coming off of that up until this point. But I think if Donald Trump gets in the White House, these students are in for a rude awakening when they enter the job market. I think if we get another 4 years of Joe Biden, they could be working at the White House. They could be Biden administration officials within the next year or two.
Well, yeah, that's what when we had Ben Weingarten on last week, that's what he was talking about. He's like, these people that you see out there are going to be working in the State Department.
Yeah.
When they, and whatever the degree was, it doesn't matter.
They're going to be sicking the FBI yes. on you when you go to a Latin mass, these students. So just keep that in mind. But I do think if Donald Trump wins.
Yeah, if the gravy train stoppeth.
Yeah, I don't think
at the millionth mile of Joe Biden's journey over bridges with Angelo the conductor.
I don't think the MAGA movement is going to coincide well with this anti-Jew, anti-Semitic protest theme that keeps popping up. And I just want to get to another part of this. It says within 15 minutes. Now, we're still at Harvard. OK, within 15 minutes, administrators exited as protesters who were chanting, "Admin, admin, you can't hide. We charge you with genocide. And every dollar Harvard supplies, a neighborhood in Gaza dies." With megaphones and drums, encircled and followed them out of the yard. During the vigil, one protester noted that Saturday night was the White House Correspondents' Dinner and urged attendees to remember the names of journalists killed in Palestine before and after Hamas's October 7th attack on Israel. I did hear that there was a lot of anti-Israel protesters outside the White House Correspondents' Dinner. I chose Jared.
A lot of them inside, too.
Yeah, but they were all dressed up. You know, they were taking the night off from the protest world so they could go to a journalist prom and, you know, soak up each other's awesomeness. But this event, this White House Correspondents' Dinner, I got to read you here the best quote I've seen in a while. This is from, I've been wondering. So, Kim, follow my train of thought here. I know it's like following, I don't even know. It's like a maze, a mouse in a maze here. But this morning I thought, I saw this story about Kim Kardashian going to the White House to meet with Kamala Harris about prison reform. We know she did that when Trump was in office. And since then, she has continued to not voice her support for Trump, but to say that she thought he did a good job with prison reform. Now she's going to the Biden White House. And I remember when she went and met with Trump that Jim Acosta was very critical of this. And he was actually very, I thought he was being very misogynistic the way he described Kim Kardashian going to the White House and the White House, you know, embracing her visit. And I was curious. I'm like, I wonder if Jim Acosta said anything about her going now that she's going to visit Kamala Harris. And I stumbled upon this gem while on Jim Acosta's feed. This is a quote from Jim Acosta. Colin Jost, he's a writer at SNL. He hosted the White House Correspondents' Dinner. By all reviews, it was a dud. There were no funny jokes. It was like an episode of SNL. You had all of these brilliant comedic minds joined together to create like 20 minutes worth of content, and there was not one funny joke in the lot, okay? So it says, Colin Jost had a pretty apt joke tonight when he said this may be the final White House Correspondents' Dinner. I think people have to think seriously about what's going on right now. That's Jim Acosta. He wants you all to realize how high the stakes are, that we might actually not have a White House Correspondents' Dinner in the future. Of course, my response to that is that a promise or a threat, Jim? If we could do away with this useless spending so that all these journalists can, you know, tell each other how great they're doing, I would be just fine with that. I did go on the Daily Mail, Jared, because sometimes these events, these White House Correspondents' Dinners, sometimes they bring in pretty big celebrities. And I've been seeing stories. Joe Concha had one today about how there's a lot of Hollywood stars who actually don't support Joe Biden, but they're too afraid to come out and say that. My advice to them would be you don't have to come out and say that you don't like Joe Biden. By saying nothing, you're doing enough. Just don't go on your Instagrams and encourage people to vote for him. Encourage your ignorant followers to go vote for him. That's all I ask. But the reason I bring that up is because in the past, celebrities used to go to this. It wasn't as much as like a state dinner, but there'd be a few big name celebrities who would go to the White House Correspondents' Dinner. So I went, Jared, to the bottom of the Daily Mail, and you get past all the journalists, you know, all the fancy journalists who are doing such a great job. You go to the bottom to see any of the celebrities. I'm not saying this to be a hater. Famous last words. I'm not saying this to be mean. But talk about C-list. I'm talking like reality TV, Bravo. I would be thrilled to meet any of these people, because I watch a lot of these shows. But the fact that the best they could do was I'm not going to name anyone specifically. The fact that the best they could do was some Bravo celebrities to show up to this White House Correspondents' Dinner doesn't bode well for Joe. Let's go to Jerry very quickly before we go to break here. Go ahead, Jerry.
Hey, Grace, I'll try to be quick. So in my lifetime, I have owned 7 dogs and worked with thousands of dogs. And let me just say that sometimes there is a dog that's just not right. That being said, this is what bothers me. That people are less put off or less disturbed. If Christy Noem in her book came out and said, when I was 18, I found myself in a bad situation, unmarried, pregnant, and I had an abortion, they wouldn't raise an eyelid. Yet, because she did this to a dog, this becomes a disqualifier for the second highest office in the country.
Yeah, you know what, Jared actually brought up that point earlier, and here's what I would say. Sometimes you go to, like, a scary movie, and I hope I don't seem as though I'm making light of anything. I'm just using this as a way for people to follow what I'm saying. Sometimes you go to, like, a horror movie, and people die in the horror movie. People get murdered, you know, Texas Chainsaw, things like that. And you'll notice that in the theater, a lot of people don't react until an animal gets killed, like a dog. And then the whole theater is quiet. I can't explain it, and I'm not saying it's right. I'm not saying it's right. But there is something there where people feel very strongly. People love their dogs. And I don't have a dog. I'm not like a huge dog person. But I get why this is so unnerving for people. And it kind of reminds me of, I talked to Howie about this once, and he said, you can't control what people are going to care about and what they're not going to care about. In other words, like, your point is... makes sense to me, but it doesn't make sense that Christy Noem wouldn't understand that there would be this reaction and put this in her book, because you can't control how much people love dogs. They just do. And so by putting this in your book and kind of acting the way I read it was like she was proud of it or something, very bizarre, especially for someone who was in contention to be vice president. I don't think she is anymore. That's just my thought. Listen up, everyone. You've waited through the cold temps in February and the rainy weather in March. February. I'm trying to say it like Taylor. February. And the rainy weather in March, and now the longer, warmer days are finally on their way. Spring means more flowers and sunshine, but unfortunately, it can also mean pollen. Take today, for example. Gorgeous New England Monday afternoon. You cannot beat this, Jared. But it does mean that sometimes you go out to your car at the end of the workday, you're going to see a little bit of that yellow pollen on the windshield.
Yeah, I had the windows and door open this weekend. It was nice. It was great. But, yeah, I could see everything coming in. And, you know, normally that's terrible news for me. But it gets eased up with a thunderstorm because all I have to do is plug it into the wall, turn it on, and I get that ionized air. And that eliminates any allergens and pollutants in the air. And you're breathing easy. You don't have to worry about it during this allergy season.
Yeah, you want to watch this beautiful time of year roll in without having to reach for the tissues. The three-pack special is such a great deal. I want you guys to take advantage of it. So go to EdenPureDeals.com and use code GRACE3. That's EdenPureDeals.com. Use code GRACE and the number 3. Don't forget the code GRACE3. Say hello to spring and goodbye to allergens. This also works great for any unwanted odors. Keep that in mind as well. Get the 3-pack today. Go to EdenPureDeals.com and don't forget the code GRACE3. We'll be right back.
The Grace Curley Show will be right back. This is the Grace Curley Show.
Welcome back, everyone, to the Grace Curley Show. It is our poll question, so we will be talking about the Christy Noem dog story. Not a lot, but we'll mention it in the next couple of hours. She killed one of her own dogs, her 14-month-old dog named Cricket. She said, I hated that dog. It had to be done. So she does write that Cricket was untrainable, that he or she, I'm not sure, doesn't give a gender here. a sex, I think, is more appropriate. Gender can be any identity, right? I don't think dogs can pick their gender. I don't know. Anyway, so Noem talks about how the dog killed chickens, attacked a bunch of chickens, ended up killing them, and then she had to apologize to the neighbor. And she decided that after
chickens,
the electric shock collar wasn't working, that she was going to execute the dog, and she shot the dog. I cannot understand, unless she thought, I got to get ahead of this. This is going to come out. This is the stupidest thing a politician could do. I mean, we saw the way, and it'd be one thing if, like, we didn't know how the media reacts when politicians mistreat dogs, let alone shoot them, but we know. Mitt Romney put his dog Seamus in a crate on top of the car. Compared to this, Mitt Romney looks like the dog owner of the year or of the decade. He's like, I was just, you know, I was letting Seamus feel the wind in his ears. He was enjoying it. I think he actually said, like, oh, no, Seamus likes to ride on top of the car or something like that. We saw that. We saw, was it LBJ who held up the Beagles at one point by the ears, and that was a big problem? I mean, the media and voters do not like politicians who are mean to dogs. Now, people who grew up on farms, people from South Dakota and other states where they have to deal with things like this, like with farm life, I mean, have come to her defense, some people, and said, this is what happens on a farm. You know, it's not pretty, but it does happen. Still doesn't explain why she wrote it in a book. Still doesn't explain why she felt compelled to share this. And so I'm just utterly perplexed by what would compel her to write this down and think it was a good idea to blast it out. And she's pretty defiant. She put out a statement trying to... And here's, I guess, part of my question. Did she think that there's a segment of the country, and maybe there is, that would think this is cool or good or, you know, badass? I don't think there is, but I'm just trying to understand. 844-500-4242. I want to mention here, we're talking about the Karen Reed trial today. Courthouse is packed. Free Karen Reed protests going on. I know that the protesters have to stay, I think, like 200 feet away from the courthouse, but they're everywhere. There's choppers above. The circus has begun. The juror selection, it was kind of quiet. Now it's really picking up. And I talked to Howie today, and we were kind of going back and forth on this. I asked him, you know, are you going to try to get Turtle Boy on this week? And he said to me, no, I have a feeling this is going to go on for a long time. Like, every time a question is asked, there's going to be pushback from the other side. There's going to be a lot of side paneling, a lot of side conversations about what can be admissible and what can't be. I object. You guys know the drill. And it's funny because Fox News has a story on this, and they interviewed a professor, Christopher Dearborn, from Suffolk Law and Suffolk University Law. And listen to what he said. He said, the influence of media, social media, the sidebars with the turtle blogger, the turtle blogger, all the information that's been going back and forth from the DA's office and the defense team, I think it's going to be a long road to pick an impartial jury. That's what he had to say about picking a jury. And we saw that was going to be a long road. But Howie's point is, I think with all of this other stuff, it's just going to be a long road in general. Like, some of these cases, they say 5 to 6 weeks. I don't know. Between Morrissey's videos he was putting out about Turtle Boy, Turtle Boy's in court reporting on this stuff, the protesters, I see this taking a lot longer than 6 weeks. I could be wrong, but that's just my prediction. When we come back, we got so much more to talk about, and we're going to take your calls. We'll talk Jim Biden in the next segment. Don't go anywhere.